Appreciate Brother Lee's prayer. And if you want to turn with me this morning, I want to continue our study in Ecclesiastes chapter 10. And pray for me as well. Like I said, I don't have a lot of voice this morning, but pray that the Lord will bless us to spend our time together in a way that's edifying and honoring unto Him. So I'll probably be drinking a lot of water this morning. But if you want to title the message, well, again, we'll be in Ecclesiastes chapter 10. And we can title it Words of Wisdom for Everyday Life. Coming on the heels of Ecclesiastes chapter 9, I want us to remember the precedent that by the inspiration of God, Solomon set forth in the beginning of Ecclesiastes chapter 9, reminding us that we serve a sovereign God. You know, and that's carried over into, well, our message on the last few Sundays from Ecclesiastes chapter 9. And now we've noted, based on the last message, that the tenor of the book that we've been studying is now shifting. And what we're going to see in chapter 10 and all the way through chapter 12 now is something very similar to what we find in the Proverbs. And what we have now with Solomon setting the stage, he's essentially told us, I've tried everything that there is to try out in the world. I have sought out the experiences of the world. I have tried to make meaning of life through work, through seeking pleasure, through seeking knowledge, through public projects, through my office as the king of Israel, and it's all ended up being vanity and vexation of the spirit. We see that there were things that he engaged in that on the surface weren't immoral or bad, but they were divorced from the will of God. And then there were those things that he did that were indeed immoral and sinful and bad, and certainly were divorced from the will of God. And he shares all of this life experience with us to remind us that whatever we do, if our lives are out of sync or out of balance with God, then it's going to ultimately end up in frustration. And we're in that time of year where, again, people are shifting gears in life. We have folks that will be going back to school here in a week or so, and we've got young people that have graduated high school that are going to be going to college. We have young folks that have gone to college and they're starting work, folks starting their lives. We've heard through the prayer requests, folks that are soon to be married, folks that are having children and so forth. So I want to say that what we're going to read this morning is applicable to every season of life. I like to picture here Solomon, and I don't think I'm off base. Solomon is sharing these words of wisdom with his children, sharing his words of wisdom with those that he cares about, and again, ultimately, by the inspiration of God, shared with all of us as God's people. And there's a couple of practical lessons here that I want us to look at. We're going to read through this passage, and there's really three practical lessons in here, but with the time that we have this morning, we'll look at two. But if you want to just go back and read verse 16, it sort of explains itself. It deals with rulers. It deals with those who rule over the land and the ones that they appoint to rule over the land. And it talks about when it's good for a nation and when it's bad for a nation. So that can be your homework in verse 16. Let's read starting at verse 8. Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 8. It says this. He says, he that diggeth a pit shall fall into it, and whoso breaketh a hedge, a serpent shall bite him. Whoso removeth stones shall be hurt therewith, and he that cleaveth wood shall be endangered thereby. Verse 10 says, if the iron be blunt, and he do not whet the edge, then must he put to more strength, but wisdom is profitable to direct. Verse 11, he says, surely the serpent will bite without enchantment, and the babbler is no better. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool will swallow up himself. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is mischievous madness. A fool also is full of words. A man cannot tell what shall be and what shall be after him. Who can tell him? Verse 15, it says, the labor of the foolish wearieth every one of them, because he knoweth not how to go to the city. And then verse 16, we're just going to read that. Remember, that's your homework. Woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child, and thy princes eat in the morning. Blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles, and the princes eat in due season for strength and not for drunkenness. So what we have here is the word of God, and I want you to see here, this, as we read these and you listen to these, you're maybe saying to yourself, well, how on earth does any of this apply to me today? Well, Lord willing, we're going to see that it all applies to us as God's people. But first, an illustration. There is a restaurant that I like to go to and my family likes to go to, an Asian restaurant in Jacksonville that we frequent probably about once a month, more than we should frequent, and they have television screens in this restaurant that we go to. And I don't know if you've noticed, if you like Asian food and you go to Asian restaurants, on the television screen, sometimes they have the most bizarre stuff on there. And I don't understand it, but the channel of choice in this one restaurant that we go to, and you know, you can't look without, you know, there's always a television in the corner of your eye. They like to show this channel called the Fail Army. Have you heard about that? Your kids have probably heard about that. But apparently the Fail Army, which started out as these reels of just people doing foolish things and suffering the consequences of foolish things, apparently there's a television channel because it just plays on and on and on in this restaurant. And it's people that in just everyday situations that, you know, they usually end up in some kind of calamity. Like there was one the other day, there was a guy working a backhoe on a tractor. He was... I'm assuming he was someone with knowledge of how to operate a backhoe. And he was digging his backhoe, and he was digging close to a big hole in the ground. And all of a sudden, he dug into the ground. The ground collapsed underneath him, and the tractor went in the hole and sunk down in the hole. There's stuff like that. There's people driving, somebody driving a school bus and, you know, taking out the mailboxes in the neighborhood. And that's really all it is. And, you know, I'll confess that I have a morbid curiosity about that type of stuff. I blame Ashley Thompson. It's all about her. She's the one that corrupted me to laugh at stuff that I shouldn't laugh at. She knows it. But what struck me, I thought about this, the Fail Army came to mind as I was thinking about this passage of Scripture. Because Solomon is teaching us here, and when you watch those things, you see people doing their jobs. You know, somebody backing up a semi-truck and, you know, backing into the canopy or not being able to get into the spot where they're supposed to back up. The guy with the tractor, the people that are building the buildings that the building falls down or whatever. These are people that I assume that they have knowledge about their trade. They have knowledge about whatever their job is, whatever their responsibilities are. But in the Fail Army, you see a lot of people with knowledge that don't exercise wisdom. And that's what this is all about here in Ecclesiastes chapter 10. What we're going to see here, he's going to go through all of these different vocations. And, you know, when we read them very quickly, you may think, well, these just seem to be simple tasks. But remember, in Solomon's time, he's talking about skilled work. He's talking about people doing jobs that have training and knowledge about what they're doing, but they don't exercise wisdom. And that's why I titled the message this morning, Words of Wisdom for Everyday Life. And, you know, you watch those videos and we chuckle about them. And I assume that everybody in those videos ended up being safe and not being injured. But, you know, the guy that can operate the track hoe, the guy that can operate the front end loader, he's probably been trained and probably been has some kind of certification. You know, you have to have an OSHA certification to drive a forklift. That's one of them as well. The forklift driver is knocking down 5,000 square feet of bottles or something like that. We can have knowledge about something, but not exercise wisdom. And that's what Solomon is warning us about. Now I want to tell you, as we go into a new chapter in life, maybe you're starting school, starting high school, or going to college, or you're going to get married, or you've just gotten married, or you're going to have kids, or just have kids, you've gone to college, and you've gotten a whole lot of education. knowledge is a good thing, but as God's people, we understand from God's word that we can have a whole lot of knowledge without wisdom. And for us as Christians, us that profess to follow Christ, we can have a whole lot of knowledge about things in the world, but if we don't exercise godly wisdom, you know, it comes back to what Solomon has taught us in here, that without godly wisdom, without godly balance, it all becomes just frustrating, it becomes futile. As Solomon said, it becomes vanity and vexation of spirit. In 2026, I believe that we have the greatest access to knowledge that anyone's ever had in human history. Today we have that access to knowledge, and it's incredible to think about. With me finishing up my education just here recently, the access to knowledge has just blown my mind. I am in the generation where when I started college, you had to go to the library and go through the card catalog to do your research and find your information and to write a 20-page paper. It ended up being a month-long process as you went into the card catalog, and if the library didn't have what you needed there at school, they had to get it from somewhere else. And you know, it was an arduous process to the point now where I didn't ever step foot in the library working on my graduate degree. You could pull it all up on the computer. And now we live in a time, it blows my mind, that AI is doing things for everyone. I've seen the Terminator movies. That worries me to some degree. Hopefully they don't get too smart, but we have access to knowledge. If you don't know where to look for knowledge, you can just type it into Grok or whatever it is. Siri can tell you. And those things can be convenient and helpful in a lot of ways. We have plenty of knowledge in the world if people will appropriate the knowledge. What we don't have plenty of here in the times that we live in, and even amongst God's people, is the appropriation of wisdom with knowledge. And that's important in the world that we live in. No matter what stage of life you find yourself in, you know, knowledge alone isn't enough. My dad, when I was in high school and middle school and during the summers, he was a plumbing contractor, and he made it his mission to work me hard enough during the summer that I would be motivated to go to school and find something else to do. He was successful at that. So I would work with him, and you know, a lot of my work was digging ditches. He was a plumbing contractor, doing all the stuff that he didn't have anybody else to do, character building work. And, you know, I learned a little bit about that. But, you know, I had an issue come up just not too terribly long ago of a plumbing issue there at the house. And he said, son, you handle the teaching stuff and let me handle the plumbing stuff. You know just enough to be dangerous. And I want to tell you, having knowledge without exercising wisdom is the same thing. We know just enough to be dangerous. And I think that's why we are the way that we are in many avenues of our life and our culture today. It's not a lack of knowledge. You know, our kids today, a four-year-old kid, you know, has access to knowledge that Rhodes Scholars didn't have 150 or 200 years ago. It's wisdom that is lacking. So that's what he's going to teach us here. And go back, you know, we go back as we think about that thing. And let me tell you this, we can have wisdom in one area of life and not be wise in other areas of life. You know, we're so arrogant sometimes we think, well, I've got this part of my life locked down. Maybe it's our job. I'm on the career track. I've got my job locked down. And we become so arrogant that we think that having that one area locked down makes everything else okay. When we talk about wisdom, what we see with Solomon is, you know, there's multiple areas in our lives where we need to seek godly wisdom. And we can have a grasp in one area and just be a mess in every other area of our lives. You know, and I go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 11, where Solomon would say this, and, you know, this segues us. We think about these words of wisdom that he's going to give us. You know, this is wisdom here when he says in verse 11, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. That's wisdom. That's saying right there that you can have the knowledge part of life locked down. And if you don't understand godly wisdom, these things are going to happen and they're just going to rock your world. Because that's the way it is. You know, the race isn't always to the swift, is there? The tortoise and the hare, we talked about. The battle's not always to the strong. You know, you think about elite athletes and, you know, the sometimes the fastest man alive loses the race to someone much slower. Nor yet bred to the wise. There are people I mentioned, people I went to school with that would qualify as very highly gifted that can't hold down jobs because they don't know how to get along with other people. Then he says, time and chance happeneth to them all. And let me just say this, apart from the wisdom of God in your life, your endeavors will just end in disaster. So that's what I always want to think about. There's two things here. He's going to talk about the knowledge that we have, and then he's going to talk about our tongue and how we communicate with other people. So again, without wisdom in our lives, we are going to be deficient as God's people, no matter how much knowledge we have. It doesn't matter how many degrees you have. It doesn't matter how much training, how much education that you have. And I'm all for folks getting an education. I'm all for folks increasing in knowledge, but I want you to understand that if we don't exercise godly wisdom with it, we know just enough to be dangerous. And I want to say this, don't put too much stock into whatever you're holding in your hands or whatever you've packed into your mind. That's what Solomon is teaching us here. Education is not enough to get you through life. It's not. Education, again, there's a lot of people that have a lot of education that are really dangerous out there in the world because they don't have wisdom. What are we to do as God's people? Remember what Solomon said in Proverbs chapter 3. We trust in the Lord. He says, trust in the Lord with all thy might and lean not unto thine own understanding. You know, trust in the Lord. Trust in him. He doesn't say lean on all of your education, lean on all of your training, lean on all of your skills. It says we're to lean on the Lord and his wisdom. So really in here we have five things that are mentioned that as we read them, you see on the surface, you don't know how they would apply to this. But let's look at these really five proverbs that Solomon talks about here. First of all, we go to verse 8 and it says, he that diggeth a pit shall fall into it. What is he talking about when he says, he that diggeth a pit shall fall into it? Now, what I see here, he's talking about an individual that's getting ready to build a structure. And again, I want you to think about all of these things. These were skilled jobs that were critical during the time that Solomon lived in. Anyone that was going to build a significant structure, remember this is King Solomon, when he's referencing someone that's going to build this great structure, he's talking about someone with a lot of skill. And they were skilled builders during that day. There's structures that are standing from ancient times. I think about the pyramids that you go to Egypt and you see all of those pyramids that were built thousands and thousands of years ago that are still standing. They had some knowledge. I think about the Roman roads. The Romans, they had knowledge on how to build a road that no one has figured out yet. I hope that they do and they get on Interstate 10 and 95 and figure it out. He's talking about someone that has the knowledge and skill to build a structure. What he is picturing here is someone with the skill. They're digging footers for a foundation. We would call them footers for a foundation. They're digging out and they're building footers for a foundation. You know, and I couldn't help but think about when we lived in Crestview, they were building a multi-story hotel just, I'm sorry, not Crestview, and we were in Fort Wayne, Indiana. But there was one in Crestview as well, similar situation. They were building this multi-story hotel right off the interstate in Crestview. And they prepared the land and they got the shell of the structure up. And what happened was that they did all of the skill stuff, but somewhere along the way, someone didn't exercise wisdom and figure out that they needed to go farther and farther into the ground to build that foundation, to build that structure. And that structure started sinking into the ground where it got to the point where it was at risk of falling, and they had to tear the whole thing down. There was somebody with knowledge, but they didn't have enough wisdom in that situation to dig the foundation right. But he's saying here, here's someone that has the skill to dig this pit. They're digging this foundation, but they do something like fail army and get themselves in a precarious position, and they fall into the pit that they dug. Maybe he's talking about someone that lost their life. Maybe he's talking about someone that, they were building up this structure and they fell off the structure because they were being careless. It says this, something to think about. He that diggeth a pit shall fall into it. Then in verse 8 he says, and whoso breaketh a hedge, a serpent shall bite him. Now what is a hedge? A hedge is a wall. So this reminds me a lot of, someone that's going in and they're going to remodel some structure. Again, during those times, they would go, and archaeologists have found these ancient sites where they can just peel back the layers and see different errors in a particular structure or building. But now he's talking about someone, maybe a contractor that's skilled enough to knock down a wall and put in a new wall, or put in a bathroom where there was once a closet or something like that. Here's somebody with skill, so they're breaking down this hedge and breaking down this wall, and they stick their hand in a hole and a serpent bites them. A snake bites them. There's knowledge, but wisdom was not exercised. And then verse 9, whoso removeth stones shall be hurt therewith. Now what he's talking about here is a stonemason. You realize that stonemasons were one of the most skilled trades in the ancient times. And it's incredible. You think about the pyramids, but think about this, the temple that Solomon built. You can go to Jerusalem today, and modern Jerusalem is built on top of those stones that comprise Solomon's temple. And you can go down there and take tours. And when Solomon had the temple built, many of those stones in that temple, they're estimated to be 80 tons right now. And here's the interesting thing. These stones were quarried many miles away, and they did not prepare the stones there where the temple was. So the stonemasons would cut this stone out of this rock, and they had a particular way that was prescribed for them to create these stones. And these stones, they were so well done that they were polished on every side. And somehow they moved these 80-ton stones multiple miles to set there for that temple. And they didn't use mortar. These stones were so even that they laid them on top of each other. And even today, you can go down there and you can't even slip a piece of paper between the stones. And you can tell a difference on when the stones were done. So if I remember correctly, the ones for Solomon's temple, these 80-ton stones, they weren't tapered on the edges. So they were smooth. They would lay down smooth. Later on, when Herod had another temple built, you could tell a difference between the stones that were used during Herod's construction because they're not tapered. They're beveled on the corners, 80 tons. That's a highly skilled job. But he says, whoso removeth stones shall be hurt therewith. So this is talking about someone that's working with these multi-ton stones, and they're carefully crafting them to the perfect size, making sure they're polished and smooth, and they don't exercise wisdom, and a stone falls on them and they're injured. That stuff happens all the time. In these big jobs, I've learned this with my older sons in the fields that they're going into. They have safety people that are paid safety folks that are on those jobs all the time, because there's lots of people with knowledge that don't always exercise wisdom. And it goes on in verse 9 and 10. He that cleaveth wood, he says, shall be endangered thereby. If the iron be blunt, and he do not whet the edge, then he must put to more strength, but wisdom is profitable to direct. I think what he's talking about here is a millwright, someone milling wood, chopping wood, and making cabinets or making furniture out of it. And he's talking about someone with this skill. But here's someone that is working with a dull axe. I think I deal with people sometimes that their axe is kind of dull. But, you know, here it is. Here's someone that has skills to chop down a tree, to mill the wood, and create some functional piece of furniture, but they're not exercising wisdom, and they're using dull tools. And even if you're just a weekend handyman, one of the most dangerous things that you can do is not a tool that's too sharp. You've got to be careful. But you try to use something that's dull. And the picture here is somebody having to work harder, use more of their strength, and in their exertion, they injure themselves. Knowledge without wisdom. And the craziest one to me is in verse 11, surely the serpent will bite without enchantment. So apparently somewhere along the way, and yeah, you've seen these things where the guys play the little flute or whatever it is and charm the snakes. Apparently there's something to that. And he says here's someone with skilled with the ability, I don't know why, but skilled with the ability to enchant and entrance a serpent before grabbing that serpent. But they don't do the enchantment and the snake bites them. Knowledge without wisdom. Again, I hope that you see in this, and you know, you can place your own vocation in that category. You can place your own lot in life. School teacher, you know, tax collector, land surveyor, farmer, and you can place yourself in the husband, wife, child, parent, whatever. You can place yourself in that category and understand that knowledge is nothing without exercising wisdom. And that's what Solomon is teaching us here. He says all of these skilled jobs, people with tons of knowledge, people who it takes years and years and years for them to build a knowledge base to be able to do these things, if they don't exercise wisdom, it ends in disaster. And I want you to understand, child of God, if we don't exercise godly wisdom with the knowledge that we have, and I want you to remember that whatever knowledge we have is by the grace of God. He's blessed you with a sharp mind. He's blessed you with physical capacities. He's blessed you with abilities. But in that, if you don't exercise godly wisdom, you'll find yourself like Solomon was earlier in this book, saying it's all vanity and vexation of spirit. But even more so, I want you to see here, he's telling us if we don't exercise godly wisdom and we just go in our knowledge, it's dangerous for us. We see here serpents being bitten, someone injuring themselves with a blunt axe, someone that has removes a big stone and it falls on them, someone who sticks their hand in a place where they shouldn't stick it and a snake bites them. Wisdom is a necessity as we live our lives here in this world. And that is 180 degrees from the world that we live in today. The world that we live in today puts all of its stock in knowledge. And again, that's not really anything new. We talked about the philosophers of old, the great thinkers of old, the intellectuals of old. There are so many of them that they put all of the emphasis on knowledge. And again, knowledge in and of itself is not a bad thing. Again, I'm a proponent for us not walking around ignorant in any avenue of life. But when we say it's knowledge alone is when we're going to get ourselves in trouble. You know, knowledge alone is not going to get us through this life and us experience, again, the joy that is before us as God's people. Surely the serpent shall bite without enchantment. So that's a simple message for the first part of this sermon. Knowledge is good, but we need to exercise wisdom as God's people. And we understand that the wisdom that God has provided for us is contained in His Word. He's given us by His grace His Word, which gives us wisdom. Oh, we live in a world today where there are a lot of folks with a lot of knowledge that think that they're smarter than God. They think that they know more than God. They have, in their pursuit of knowledge, have completely just divorce themselves from God and divorce themselves from the reality that there is a creator that spoke this world into existence. And many people in their pursuit of knowledge just go in bizarre directions. You know, there are many many folks that have gained so much knowledge that they have completely abandoned the teachings of creation, where God created man from the dust of the earth and created woman from man, to the point where they think that we've evolved from some primordial sludge. How smart are they? we live in a time today where I think in people's pursuit of knowledge, they get bold and they get prideful. You know, a lot of workplace accidents don't happen because of ignorance. It happens because people become complacent and people become overconfident in their abilities. Let's not be that way as God's people. So Solomon teaches us that. He teaches us here to not put so much stock into whatever we're holding on materially, whatever knowledge or whatever skills we have, or whatever we've gained from going to school, going to university. Don't hold on so tight to what you've put in your mind and you can do with your hands that you forget that it's God that gives us wisdom. Now he goes on and along these lines, and I think this is the very similar in Watts here, is that we, in wisdom, we have to be careful to not let our tongues go too far. Now this is not the first time Solomon has brought this up. You know, we as God's people, we're not always obligated to say everything that comes to our minds. You realize that? And as God's people, we are obligated to be careful, to be careful about how we say the things that we should say. Yeah, you think about the social media age today. It's empowered. Everybody has a platform. Everybody has this opportunity, if you're on social media, just to share whatever you want to share out there. And there could be benefits to that. There's a lot of stuff that comes to our mind that we just need to keep to ourselves. You know, I think people have always just been out there, and there's always been people that's out on the fringes, but now, you know, everybody has a platform, and everybody with some sort of bizarre notion, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again, you know, there's folks out there that could say, hey, the sky is purple with green polka dots out there, and there'll be hundreds and hundreds of people that'll say, yeah. You don't have to say every bizarre thing that comes to your mind. You say, well, I don't have a filter. I say, well, you ought to. You got the Spirit of God. You've got a filter there. So he goes on in verse 12 and says this. He says, the words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool will swallow up himself. Again, think about the theme that we've talked about with knowledge and wisdom. Just because you have knowledge doesn't mean what you're saying is wise. Or it doesn't mean that it's wise to be saying what you're saying. There's a lot of people far smarter than I am, far smarter than we are, that say a lot of things that are foolish in what comes out of their mouth. He says, the words of a wise man are gracious. Let's just think about that. If we're walking in wisdom as God's people, the words that should come forth out of our mouth should be gracious words. Child of God, I want you to understand, if we're walking in wisdom, we are striving to be careful with what comes out of our mouths. And again, we live in a world today that just says, whatever you think, just say it. You're entitled to say whatever you want to say. I say, just because you can say something doesn't mean that you ought to. And that's what Solomon is saying here. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious. And then the contrast, he says, but the lips of a fool will swallow up himself. And here's something I want you to consider, young folks, today. You know, the things that you say to other people create an impression in their minds about who you are. And I want you to understand that. You know, I don't think that's just for young people. The things that you say give people an impression of who you are. And I tell you, there's sometimes, you know, we in this flesh, there are sometimes we say things to be quirky, to be funny, to try to be humorous, and I don't think that we realize the impact that those words have on other people sometimes. Solomon says that our words are to be gracious. The Apostle Paul, I believe it's Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6, he says this, let your speech be always with grace. He says, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how you ought to answer every man. what he's saying here, our speech should always be with grace. I confess that I fall short in that area. But I confess as well, that's the truth, and that's what we should be seeking to do as God's people. All of our words, and let me say this, those words that you type out when you send out that email or when you post your thoughts on whatever the calamity of the day is, child of God, the Bible says that our speech should always be with grace. And he uses the illustration of being seasoned with salt. When I think about this, I always think about grits. You know, Brother David was the king of grits. He loved grits. I think he loved them more than me. But I like grits. When grits are prepared, let me say this, when grits are prepared correctly, I like grits. But do you know what's one of the most terrible, bland things in the whole wide world? Grits without salt. The word grit comes to mind. It is grit when it's not seasoned. You know, they're grits and they're good. I like cheese in mine. I like butter. And you know, I guess I'll just confess, we've cheated since Brother David left. We don't go the 4 or 5 hour ritual where you have to babysit the pot of grits, but we do put salt and cheese in there. But without salt, it's just like grit. It reminds me of sand. You can pick up a handful of sand out there in the parking lot, it'll be the same way. He's saying that's the way it is with our speech. When our speech is not with grace, it's gritty. It's not palatable. And probably that person you're trying to convey your message to, they're not going to receive your message. You say, well, that's just the way I am. Well, I say, the Bible says that our speech is to always be with grace. Get over yourself. Strive to be gracious. We all have work in that area. I've got plenty of homework in that area. But he says, again, that let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt. He says, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. You know, that gives a condition there that without exception, we should be striving for all of our words to be gracious. I can submit unto you that there are so many difficulties that I've heaped upon myself, dealing with other people, dealing with my family, dealing with God's people, that if I'd have been a little more gracious in my words, it could have turned out differently. Paul says words without seasoning are terrible. So he talks about that. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7, he would say this. And he says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. We're to speak with wisdom. You know, we can have all the knowledge in the world, but if we don't exercise wisdom and we don't speak, let our speech be with grace, you know, whatever we're saying is not going to be received. He gives that. Now he gives another contrast as we go into verse 12. He talks about what our speech should be. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious. Now in verse 12, he says this about a fool. But the lips of a fool will swallow up himself. I want you to understand this. Your foolish words will devour and consume you. Words matter. You know, when I was a kid, you know, my parents, probably like your parents, taught you the little poem, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt you. You know, and that was to teach kids to be resilient and not allow the mean words of other people to impact them. But words have impact. And what Solomon says here, the words that we speak have a profound impact on us. And when we speak foolishly, he says here that the lips of a fool shall swallow himself up. Your foolish words will devour you. And what this implies to me is that when fools put forth foolish words, it's going to hurt them more than it hurts others. You know, you just think about the scope of influence that you have in life. We've got folks that we love and respect. We've got folks that are very wise. But if we just think a little bit, we have to deal with fools in our lives, don't we? You think about how they talk. You know, foolish words will marginalize an individual. Foolish words will destroy someone's credibility, destroy someone's effectiveness. And as God's people, we need to be careful that we don't destroy our witness out in the world by just saying stupid stuff. You know, we are called to represent Christ, and when we leave this place and be the light of the world and the salt of the earth, and we need to be careful with our words that we don't give someone a bad impression about the things of God because we can't have grace in our speech. It makes a difference. And he goes on. The beginning, verse 13, the beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, talking about the fool again, and the end of his talk is mischievous madness. You ever just talk to someone that, you know, they start out and you say, well, this person is a little bit different. this person has some strange different ideas. And, you know, what Solomon is saying here is oftentimes those folks that start out with foolish words in the beginning, you start listening to them more. You see that there's a mischievous madness to what they're doing. I guess that's the biblical way of saying someone that's just, you know, they're just insane. They're mad. Words matter. Verse 14, a fool is also full of words. Man, there are some people that just like to talk. And have you ever been around someone they just like to talk so they can hear themselves talk? That's foolishness. You know, it's okay to not have an answer for everything that someone says. It's okay to not have some kind of solution concocted for anything. Have you been around people that, you know, if you have a problem going on, they have the answer to your problem? Those people can become insufferable, can't they? And oftentimes, foolish folks, they have the answers to all of your problems, but when it comes to their lives, everything else is in disarray and chaos. That is foolishness. He's saying here, a fool is full of words. It says, a man cannot tell what shall be. And it says, what shall be after him? Who can tell him? There are some folks that have all the solutions for your life. They can tell you how you need to live your life. But if you try to tell them anything at all, they won't hear anything from you. It's foolish communication. A fool multiplies words. A fool purports to know about everything. Be suspicious of someone who knows about everything. Again, they may know just enough to be dangerous, or they just may be foolishly speaking. I have more respect for an individual if a problem is brought up where they say, I don't know, and I'm praying for you, or I don't know, but I'll help you find an answer, than someone that just spits out some foolish information that will get you in deeper trouble. Watch your words is what he's telling us here. And what he's saying here as well on the flip side is watch out what you're listening to. Watch out for what you're allowing to be spoken unto you. I read an article back in the spring, I think it was Inc. magazine, INC magazine. They had an article about just how damaging complaining can be. They were talking about workplace complaining. Did anybody complain to you at work last week? Teachers, you're going back next week. You're going to hear some complaining. what they found out in researching these situations where people are exposed to just complaining, complaint after complaint after complaint, is that it has a detrimental effect on your mental well-being. That's not some great revelation, but research says that if you just allow people just to complain at you, and you just allow complaint after complaint after complaint, it impacts your mental health and it impacts your physical health. Well, Solomon is saying that here. Not only are we to watch our words, but we're to watch what we're to listen to. Now there's a time when complaints should be heard, but I want you to understand this about complaints. Complaining can become a habit. And also, complaining can become contagious. And I remind folks on a regular basis to think about the things that you complain about. When you think about what you're complaining about, a lot of times it makes you realize how blessed you are. You know, I'm sweating here this morning in church, or I'm freezing to death. In the big scheme of things, when you think about, you know, the rest of the problems in the world, I mean, is it really that big of a deal? They put pickles on my hamburger. I'm going to just get all torn up and tear up the place. Lord, help us. So he's saying, watch what you listen to. And for heaven's sake, turn off the television and stop listening to them complain about problems that we don't have any influence over at all. wisdom and knowledge. You can get a lot of knowledge from television. There's a whole lot of things that you'll learn that you can't do anything about at all. How about we take that time and commit to reading God's word and applying it to the things that we can impact in our lives? Wisdom and knowledge. He goes on just very quickly, verse 15. The labor of the foolish wearieth every one of them, because he knoweth not how to go to the city. This is what my dad would say. Here's someone that doesn't have walking around sense. The foolish person, the labor, you know, yeah, people, and I remember reading a book one time, I think it was a John Maxwell book, that talked about people being energy vampires. If you're around a fool for any extended period of time, it's draining, isn't it? Here, they've got all the things that I should do. They've got all of these words of wisdom for me, but they don't have enough sense to even walk around and function in their own lives, is what Solomon is saying here. They're lost and they don't know how to get home, is what Solomon says here. The labor of the foolish. And I want to say this, in our culture today, we are a people who suffer from a lack of wisdom. And more specifically, we are a people that suffer from a lack of wisdom of God. Now, I want you to understand, my friends, don't ever think you're so smart that you know better than God. Or you're so smart that you can't receive teaching and godly instruction from someone else. And don't let your words get ahead of you. Don't let your words go without considering them and considering whether or not they're edifying and honoring unto God. We have the wisdom available to us as God's children. First of all, you have the Spirit of God that has these fruits of the Spirit. You can go and read in Galatians chapter 5, all of the fruits of the Spirit that we have. But then God has given us His Word as well. And I'll leave you with this. In James chapter 1 and verse 5, you want wisdom? Wisdom is available. Notice what James says. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it says, it shall be given him. We serve the God of all wisdom. May we be a people who strive to walk in wisdom. May we understand that, yes, knowledge is important. Knowledge is critical in our lives. But knowledge without wisdom is dangerous. May we exercise wisdom in how we communicate with other people. May we not get ahead of ourselves in our words. May we be a people that are careful and what we allow to come into our minds and come into our hearts. And when we do that, we can honor God. I pray that something's been said this morning that's been some encouragement. I pray that the Lord would bless us to take heed of these things. And I will say that all of us have plenty of work to do in that area. This flesh is full of foolishness. This flesh is full of foolish talking and foolish speaking, and it's going to be a battle that we're going to fight, and I believe until we leave this world or the Lord comes back and calls us home. But we're to fight the good fight of faith. We serve the great God over all. Let's turn to song number 154.